Welcome to the 2015 Medical Journal of Australia podcast series. Today my guest is Professor Ian Hickey, who has written an article for our current issue of the MJA on the National Mental Health Commission's report to the federal government. You're the Executive Director of Brain and Mind Institute, but you're also a Commissioner on the National Mental Health Commission.
That's correct.
Were you surprised at how long it took the government to release the report you guys put out?
Yes, I was surprised.
Yeah?
Because there was an orderly process with the government. The government had agreed before the last election that rather than going to a larger review process, like a productivity commission review, and I say that because the issues in mental health are very complex. Yeah. They run across health, social services, welfare, education, etc. That, just like the review that happened in aged care, there's a need to rethink really how the whole sector is structured and financed.
Yeah.
Not simple Commonwealth state health funding as it's often presented. It's much more complex. You know, and the system needs to work as a whole. So people like Alan Fells, the chairman of the National Commission, you know, feel that the area really requires fundamental rethinking from a finance point of view. And I say Alan's been associated with those things, but also been associated with things like the development of the National Disability Insurance Scheme. Sometimes you've got to really rethink the system. Otherwise, you just get the same result. And we've had, I say that also because we've had national mental health reform in Australia for over 20 years. We've had national plans for over 20 years since 1993.
Yes.
So we've had governments, both state and federal, actually committed. We've had many good political leaders right back into the Keating years, through the Howard years, certainly had a bump there in the Rudd period,
yep.
But the Gillard years. And at a state level, we've had many state premiers who are actually very strong on these issues. But we haven't really changed the system. And I must say, sadly, in my own lifetime, I've been associated with a series of human rights, you know, national reviews, inquiries with government and with non-government organisations, which largely, if you walk out on the street and ask people their experience today, many situations, it's not any better. And I say that because, in fact, the MJA published an article of ours just last year about tracking. We've been tracking what, you know, community groups and others say, and they say, actually, very sadly, it's somewhat worse than it was a decade ago from their point of view, that on many of the key issues that we prioritised then, included early intervention, better acute services, dealing with comorbidity with alcohol and physical health problems. Many of those key groups feel that we've actually, despite the increasing public expectation, increased commitment of government,
yes.
Big commitment under the Howard Yemo deal with COAG in 2006, big commitment by Julia Gillard, that on the ground, we're finding progress. So Tony Abbott, actually having been health minister, was quite aware of this. He said, look, let's not have a productivity commission review, fundamental, because that's a long and complex process. We've got a national commission. Why don't we use it? So Peter Dutton oversaw an orderly process to take a year to report back to the Commonwealth on Commonwealth programs because they can control those things. And I made the comment in the article, many of the big reforms that have really achieved anything in mental health have been Commonwealth funded. So I was associated myself with the Commonwealth funding of psychology back in 2001, things like the development of Headspace, things like
yep.
development of Built Blue, the National Suicide Prevention Strategy. These are all big Commonwealth programs. They didn't require eight states and territories to agree with the Commonwealth, and you know, and they've had big, you know, they've been very significant in development. So, and that was agreed, and that was to go into delivered to the government by November 30 last year, so they could enter into budget planning for 2015,
yes.
And you would get action during this term of government, during the first term of this Abbott government. So it was a very orderly process, and the commission did its job. It sought many specialised inputs into that. It also had over 2,000 submissions. In other words, it rounded up the experts, it got in the key groups,
yep.
It put those issues in. Very significantly, it tried to align mental health with health,
yes.
Bigger health reform, and I come to the key issue there, which is really the regional architecture of health.
Right.
You know, this Commonwealth-state discussion does everyone's head in. You know,
does,
anyone actually
yes.
working in any health area knows it's about where you live in the region. And there are, you know, there were sort of 55 Medicare locals, et cetera. They roughly correspond to the primary care regions in Australia, and that's where we've got to make health work. So health has to be locally empowered, Commonwealth and state and non-government organisations all working effectively in those areas. So we've gone with the architecture in big health, regional responsiveness, Commonwealth can do, and then a critical, as asked by the Commonwealth, a critical eye over the programs it currently looks at and the way they're organised and whether they fit or don't fit such an approach.
Yeah.
All done, delivered to the Minister November 30th. Now,
and not released until it was leaked in April.
put the commission somewhat on the back foot. Because if you take by contrast the release of the McClure Review, welfare, and something we also had an input into, very important review, then Patrick McClure consulted.
Yep.
He released the report. He explained why the experts in that area favoured a simplification. So that would explain the difficulty and then for the minister to respond. Just this week, I've been involved in a response to the Cooperative Research Centre review, the CRC reviewer in the McFarland department. Same thing. Miles review, the review's been released. The minister has accepted all the recommendations. And now the government is going on to plan with the industry and the department how those recommendations are actually implemented. So very unfortunately, in this area of key health and social policy, we've got stuck in a machinery of government issue. So yes. I don't think that's allowed the commission to explain some of its more controversial aspects. For example, I think misreported that it simply wants to pull money out of hospitals, which is not true. It wants to devote growth funding in health expenditure preferentially to the non-hospital sector.
Right.
Because we have many reports, some of which are not in the public domain, that we have more than enough hospital beds in Australia in mental health, but we also need to not use hospital beds for housing and accommodation and social services. Very expensive way to put a roof over a head and a less preferable way to other community, step up, step down, other sorts of residential facilities and community support of other types. So this left the commission having trouble explaining some key aspects out of context for it, and I think very much prioritising regional delivery, effective primary care, some really key issues like the development of medical homes for people with complex physical health and mental health problems as a way, as real ways forward and departures from the simplistic kind of approaches we've had of constantly trying to tinker with a fundamentally broken system in our current areas. And, you know, I think, if I reach over onto my desk, it's a very large report, 700 pages. For anyone who ever wants to actually, there's a template in there of what to do on every page. And I think that, you know, those who worked on this in the commission did a fabulous job. On every day, every page, there's explanatory diagrams, there's key summaries. You know, we don't need to revisit this. We need to do things.
Something.
The response that we've got is it'll need to be reviewed by reviewers. You know, essentially in the machinery of government, immediately leading to discussions about 2016, which runs the danger of no implementation during this period of it. And we can't afford 3 years of no action in the mental health area. We had progress under the Howard Yemma deal. We stalled under the Rudd period. We had progress in the Gillard period for a very short period. And this is the tragedy of mental health, a constant stop-start. You know, and then we have royal commissions and inquiries and coroners and healthcare quality issues. We go, oh, you know, we're back where we started, rather than one of continuous improvement.
Do you think the government saw 700 pages and it went too difficult?
Well, another key structural change is the commission I'm on in the Gillard period sat under Prime Minister and Cabinet. Now, that allowed it to actually look across social services, welfare, health. And our best friends in mental health are in finance and treasury. We are productivity people. You know, we are the biggest single area that accounts for health-related disability in this country. So what the commission report emphasises on, like, page two, is the Commonwealth already spends $10 billion a year in this area, but $6 billion of that is effectively in welfare and carer support type situations, and only like $4 billion effectively in healthcare. So what it's saying, and when it was saying that, it was saying it through a whole of government and financial and social participation perspective. When we got moved back into health, which is something that the Abbott government did, we're now on after long line, because we all know what matters in health, cancer care, hospitals, emergency departments, diabetes, MBS items, PBS items, pharmacy agreement, you know, all that. And then everyone goes, mental health. Oh, well, that's hard. Look, that's a bit complex and it's a very difficult industry because it's not just in health. It's in social services and housing and education. Yes. Having been moved back there, the danger is, and it's always been the case in mental health, you go to mental health funding in services, mental health funding in research, it's way down the end of the health agenda. It's way up the top of the social agenda. Actually, we always know when there's an election on.
Yes.
Very senior people come to talk to us.
Exactly.
Because it always catches governments out. There's been no election campaign now for a decade and no leader for a decade who hasn't said mental health's really important. In fact, Tony Abbott was really smart in 2010, actually picking up the early intervention agenda, saying he would put $1.5 billion into Pat McGorry's programs in early intervention. At the time when the Labor Party couldn't organise 15 programs to add up to $200 million. Julia Gillard was very embarrassed about it, actually, when she was subsequently re-elected. She then actually got on and established the National Commission and committed to a 10-year process and put $2.5 billion into mental health in the following budget. You know, so it's a really serious issue because at the community level, in fact, just last night in Canberra, I was discussing with people, because some people think we've only had this mental health stuff in the last few years, but actually the Howard government used to run focus groups. Guess what came out? Mental health, ageing. There's a big international study in 2010 by King's College in London. Australians' biggest concerns are the economy,
yes,
climate change, mental health and ageing. You know, actually, it's really interesting that in the real community where real people live, and you go and talk to people like Warren Ench in far north Queensland or rural and regional, you know, people and members, or where I live in inner city Redfern with the local indigenous communities and local people, what do they talk about? Mental health and ageing. I mean, ageing's a really important issue too. You know, these issues where we don't feel that we've got a big hospital system that'll save us, run down the street or we get cancer, we know. And anyone who's had any experiences with these things will know there are big problems. I'm currently dealing with issues related to youth suicide in Sydney and other sets of issues. You know, and if you deal with rural suicide, it'll take suicide because this report dealt with suicide prevention too. Because we've actually had problems in the national planning of that separately to mental health over the last 15 years. You know, really serious issues that matter in community level. So we know when there's an election on because people come to talk to us. When we go back to health between elections, we're down the end of the corridor, way after those guys in suits doing PBS, cancer care, hospital administration, and the worst bit, federal-state planning, health ministers' meetings, ARMAC, you know, which is right now, is the Commonwealth going to send a very large check or not subsequent to the current healthcare agreements? You know, it's a financing issue, not really a health outcomes set of issues. So, you know, I think that's the problem that we have. It's very difficult, unless the government had a health minister who was proceeding in a considered fashion in this area, that got lost with the change of ministers. But the danger is also it gets lost in healthcare.
Yeah.
It's not lost at the community level. You know, we're really lucky. We have people like Mike Baird. You know, he launched the mental health policy here and he clearly cares. The Queensland government's been a big issue in Queensland, one of the issues where Campbell Newman made a lot of big mistakes.
Yeah.
Healthcare, but also mental health and community mental health care. So the new Queensland government has really prioritised the mental health issues. You know, we now have commissions in a number of the states. That's really interesting. The difference between a classical health and, might I say, hospital-based approach to healthcare and this, if you like, financial, economic, social participation view, people go, and also suicide prevention, because suicide, death by suicide is such a traumatic thing in families and communities, and we haven't made real progress there for a decade. You know, that these are big issues. So I think the trouble we have is we've got a template for action,
yep.
Done all the work. I'm always surprised in the mental health community that people can get out of bed and actually do it again, you know.
Day after day.
The generosity of the submissions and the people prepared to provide their advice and their time, not just, you know, to actually continue to try and work. Like all the families, all the people working it, they all accept that it's not easy. You know, it's a complex area of health and social policy. But they get up, they contribute again, put it in again. It's an Australian delusion. They have a high expectation that government will respond in a sensible and rational fashion to these issues. Well, I think the feeling is this time, the Commission is, our general feeling is, the Commission's actually done a really good job. And I must say, great credit to Alan Fells as the chair and David Butt as the CEO. Get it all together. You know, what they don't want it to become is one of those white papers or reviews that sits there and goes, oh, that was a little hard on the day.
Yes.
To digest those 700 pages. And then they don't want it to be a bad episode of Yes Minister, where it goes off to a department who then hires 20 other, you know, experts to wander through going, oh, Minister, you'd have to be brave. Those 12 suicide prevention trials. Oh, Minister, that engagement with that e-health stuff, you know, you're going to upset the practitioners in that area if you go and engage that e-health stuff, you know. You know, if young people start using this stuff online rather than using MBS items, this is very worrying, Minister. You know, this sort of, you know, all of these medical homes, you know, we have these big GP practices actually managing the physical health and mental health. You know, there's been, so this will be very difficult for those in the traditional mental health sector, you know. They won't like this, you know. Have to be, you know, it challenges. The report itself is quite challenging to the professionals.
Yes.
And to the professional groups. It values general practice. It values other areas like the Aboriginal medical services. It values the role particularly of mental health nurses. It prioritises the use of healthcare teams.
Yes.
Something we really struggle to fund and support in Australia. But, you know, mental health and substance abuse are the two areas. I mean, there are other areas like cancer care, obviously, but if you do not have multidisciplinary cohesive teams that work longitudinally, you will never improve outcomes. So there's a stack of academic evidence. I'm sick to death of writing papers about that delivers a better outcomes, but we have no financing systems or no change in systems to support the evidence-based intervention, since it's a health service intervention, not a simple pill, it's not a simple psychological therapy, it's a health service intervention. And it also goes hard on issues the MJA has run on equity. You do not get a fair deal in Australia. Rural and regional Australia, you're of lower socioeconomic group, you're from certain double disadvantaged groups, you get a raw deal. And this plays out in areas like mental health and dental care and whatever, where socioeconomics really do matter and access to care matters.
Yeah.
Now, I'm used to being attacked myself by many of my professional colleagues and their representative organisations who seem to think it's fine for everyone to travel to East Sydney or East Melbourne, pay all the expenses to get there, and then pay the practitioner a lot of out-of-pocket expenses to get quality care. Now, there's no doubt that a lot of people in those situations do get quality care, or the best they can kind of get. But lots of Australians miss out for no good reasons, and that requires fundamental system reform. Now, so I think it requires grown-up government and considered responses, particularly from the professions and from others, longer term here. But the danger, the risk is, I mean, I actually think the Prime Minister is actually quite committed to the area and politically smart. You know, he has seen both the benefits of aligning with this area and also the dangers of leaving it alone. It can blow up on you. It's one of those landmines you can tread on, you know, which you don't really suspect. And this is a history, I think, of mental health in health. But you've got to actually get beyond page two of the report and go for the totality of what's being talked about. And the template for action is there. We could be having 12 suicide, not trials, but implementation, much like the NDIS in rural and regional Australia. We've got the systems. We know we need to do it regionally and track it. We could be supporting the mental health nurses program. We could be supporting the enhancements in the Aboriginal program and the engagement of pharmacists. We could be supporting the medical homes. Very this physical health of people with mental illness is such an issue. We're supporting that integrated care sort of sets of issues. There are issues right now the Commonwealth could act on and sort out. The headspace services, which are similar things that I've been tied up with for a long period of time, and I want to see continuously improved. The money needs to go to the rural and regional services.
Yes.
Behind each of the doors of those places, there's got to be real services that link up and put those in greatest need with continuing care. We've got to evaluate and use data in an R&D-driven way. We've got to have data reporting systems in all these areas, which are about outcomes. And outcomes are, you know, for all of us, is social and economic participation. You know, it's actually being engaged with the world in productive ways. And we've got to measure that. And we've got to be prepared to say, look, just pouring more and more money. Many of my critics in this area, critics of the commission, say, look, should have asked for more money. I've personally spent 20 years asking for more money. And sometimes governments do deliver more money. But we've got to face the reality. We waste a lot of money.
Yeah.
And we don't use money effectively. Using an $800 hospital bed to provide a night, to provide accommodation. I mean, you could get a very good hotel room. You could get a suite in central Sydney. You know, it's incredibly wasteful, as has been well documented. About 30% of our acute admissions do not have a clinical crisis. They have a housing crisis. Right. They have no home. If we don't support families, we can't do these particular sort of things outside of hospitals. If we've got state and Commonwealth falling over each other in various sets of community organisations, because the state's funding various parts of community mental health while the Commonwealth funds non-government organisations to do a lot of the same work, not coordinated kind of way. If we don't have general practice integrated, if we don't have psychology integrated, we don't need another provider on every street corner of every separate part of the mental health discipline. But that's what we're getting under current MBS items. You can have all the different people all operating independently. It's very wasteful. Great credit to the MJA over the previous editor and previous two editors now.
Yeah.
You know, that Martin van der Weyden and Steve Leader and others, I think, have recognised over a long period that in Australian healthcare, and I must say, I spent quite a lot of time overseas in consultation with the US and in Canada and elsewhere. You know, Australia has big innovations in e-health technologies, in our early intervention services, etc. You know, we've got the makings of the best things. But sometimes you've got to move from the experiment to the systematic implementation.
Yes.
And that requires grown-up government, but also it requires the professions, I think, as that. And I think the MJA has done a fabulous job over the years of leadership about these issues. And if it isn't working, then we have to be honest about that and go back and say, look, it's not that individual practitioners are not trying hard. The systems they work in do not deliver for this kind of complex care. And like a lot of other health, it sits in a social context. You know, so if you're not working with families, you're not working with welfare, you're not working with employment, you're not working with housing, you won't get good incomes. You can't just look out of the hospital doors and see how it is. Or recently in a very senior health minister's discussion, why do these people kill themselves when we discharge them from hospital? You know, well, actually, it's about out there, not in the hospital. There, you know, services and care needs to continue in those sorts of situations. So, you know, these are the sort of issues, and I'm very glad the MJA is, you know, taking a leadership role in these areas and remains committed to these areas because, you know, mental health is a really fundamental part of healthcare. Yeah. But healthcare itself is more than just individual clinics and individual doctors and individual health practitioners. And I think mental health, for many of us, emphasises that. And I think the issue is the role of the MJA in publicity and in community awareness has been very large. But we do look forward to serious action
through
the period of this first Abbott government.
Terrific. That sounds like a great place to stop.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time, Professor.
Thank you so much. For